zanga Adonai nokuimba okutendereza erinya lyo gwali waguru enyo okore sange kisa chowenja.
Hello, this is Rabbi Gershom Sizomu, the spiritual lead of the Abaydaya congregation in Uganda. You are here live on State Hall on the short web.
You're listening to Shtetl on the Shortwave on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Tamara Kramer, and teching the show today is Parker Ma. Shtetl is a Yiddish word that means small town, and it describes the villages of Eastern Europe where the Jews once lived. And Shtetl on the Shortwave is a show about Jewish arts and culture in Montreal.
Amma ligale,
apa stramale,
a karnatsale,
in a glazele vine.
Welcome to Shtetl on the Shortwave. Today we have a really special show. I love it when we have live guests in the studio, and we have two today. Next week on Tuesday, August 10th, is Prisoner Justice Day, and it's a day when inmates and their friends and families don't work and don't eat for 24 hours in protest of inhumane prison conditions. John Barry is in the studio with us today, and we're going to hear about his experience over the past many years in the prison system in Canada. But before we talk with John, and John is here in the studio too, so hi John, how are you doing?
I'm good.
And before we get to your story, John, I wanted to introduce Adam Stotland. Adam plays what he calls Jewgrass music and is releasing his new album Ma'agal at a live show at the Ghetto Shoal on September 1st, and it's part of the Montreal Jewish Music Festival. It's the first year that the festival is happening. We're going to talk more about that later. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for coming in. And Adam, you're going to start us off by playing a song. What song are you going to play?
I'm going to play a song called Ye You, which is a very Jewgrass song.
Okay.
And it's the first cut off of the album.
What do you mean when you say Jewgrass?
Jewgrass is basically Jewish bluegrass music. Jewish songs in a bluegrass motif with fiddles and banjos, mandolins, singing, and sort of that folky vibe.
Okay. And the name of the album is Ma'agal?
That's right.
What does that mean?
Ma'agal means circle. Okay. And it's a reference to my circle of friends, my circle of life. It just all came back to a circle. Here we go.
This is Adam Stotland.
Don't even
Nice. So the album is going to be launched on September 1st at the Ghetto Shul, and it's part of this Jewish music festival. Do you want to tell me just a tiny bit about the festival?
Sure. This is the first annual Montreal Jewish Music Festival, and basically showcasing mostly local Jewish artists that have some sort of Jewish cultural music show. And it'll be taking place between, I believe, August 31st and September 2nd at various clubs and theaters in town. For more info, they can check out montrealjewishfest.com. And that has the whole lineup of artists, show times, show places.
It's very, very eclectic. There's all kinds
very
of different
eclectic.
Music that's going to be playing, like from hip-hop to bluegrass or
to jazz.
Yeah, it looks like a really great festival. Before we go to a break and to hear an ad, I just wanted to ask you, what does it mean for something to be Jewish music in your opinion?
In my opinion, it's something that comes from the soul, something that ties into something Jewish, be it Jewish history, Jewish identity, Jewish culture, something that has a Jewish reference in it.
Okay, so if it's just a Jewish musician playing music, that's not necessarily Jewish music.
That's not what I would consider Jewish music.
Okay.
You know?
It's interesting.
Like,
I think
Lenny Kravitz, I think, is Jewish, and I wouldn't say that he plays Jewish music.
Good one. So. Maybe he would disagree. I'm going to get him on to Shtetl.
I hope he would disagree,
about it.
And let's get him on here, and let's have it out.
You think that Lenny would come on and debate what is Jewish music on Shtetl?
I would hope so.
Okay. So we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with John Barry.
Saturday, August 7th. At the Death Church, 3067 Wellington in Verdun. The infamous What Cheer Brigade, a gigantic punk rock party time marching band, is coming all the way from Providence, Rhode Island, to make us all so happy and to solve all of our problems. Also playing that night will be Your Highness and the Toot Factory, a.k.a. Pouet Pet Pétard, a.k.a. another band that was formerly known under another name, which was more colloquially known at one point as
the Anarchist Marching Band.
Saturday, August 7th, Death Church, at 9 p.m. $3 to $10 donation, no one turned away. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Shalom Aleichem, Malachei HaSharet, CKUT Radio.
That was Alan Merowitz, a very, very funny and very old and famous Jewish klezmer musician in Canada, a really great guy. And we're back on Shtetl on the shortwave. If you're listening live, that's great. And if you want to tell people to listen, if they've missed the show, they can always go to the blog. It's shtetlontheshortwave.wordpress.com, and all the shows are there, and you can listen to them on the site. And right now we're back in the studio. We just heard from Adam Stotland playing some excellent Jewgrass music off of his album Ma'agel. And now we're going to have a chat with John Barry, He's been in and out of the prison system in Canada for a number of years, and he's now out and staying at a recovery house for Jewish men. It's in the Côte d'Ivoire area, and he's going to talk with us a little bit about his experience. So, John, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, not a problem. It's good to be here.
I guess I'll just start by asking if you would share your personal story. Tell us a bit about how you got to be in prison in the first place. And
I guess it would started when I was younger. I came from a fairly relatively good family. We had a good family home. I have five sisters. Everything was fine. My parents divorced when I was 10, and I stayed with my mother, and we had to move into a lower rent area, into the projects in the city. And from there, I guess it was downhill for me, because I started hanging around with different kids. I wasn't associating with the kids that I hung around with when I was living where I was living before, because I moved from one end of the city to the other. And for a 10-year-old kid, that's like moving across the world. So it was hard.
And you grew up in Ottawa?
Yeah.
Okay. And when was the first time that you ever ended up going to prison?
I picked up my first federal sentence when I was 16 years old. I got together with a group of guys, and we did a few things that we shouldn't have done. I don't want to be specific, but I wound up picking up 3 years, and it was quite an eye-opening experience at 16 years old to be going into the system, okay. Especially back then.
Okay, so when you're 16 years old, do you go into a juvenile?
No, a federal penitentiary. Yeah, they didn't have the young offender system back then. It didn't start until after. Okay. I was already in.
Okay. When did the young offender system start?
I believe it was 1983-84. They okay. brought it in. So why would an 82, and the people that were already in the system, they didn't revert them back to being young offenders. They just kept you in the adult system. So.
Okay. And you've been in prisons in different provinces in Canada, is that right?
Yes, I have. I've been transferred out of one prison to the next because of problems inside. You know, fighting with staff, not getting along with other inmates, you know. So if you're a problem, they don't want to keep you anymore, so they segregate you for a while, then they transfer you somewhere else.
Okay. And next week is Prisoner Justice Day.
It sure is.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if you've ever yourself participated in Prisoner Justice Day and been involved in whatever activities were going on around that.
I've actually been involved with it now for 28 years, and I've celebrated it whether I was in or whether I was out. My program facilitator probably wouldn't agree with me, but because he's saying I'm holding on to old beliefs because it's part of the prison system and I'm trying to make a new life for myself. Mm-hmm. But it's something that we need.
I think a lot of people might not have ever even heard of Prisoner Justice Day. Would you explain just a little bit what it's about or why it was created?
Well, it was created because I would say throughout the whole system, when it first started here in Canada, it led up to a point, I guess, in the late 60s into the 70s, and there was quite a bit of violence. Staff would regularly beat inmates. There was no recourse for an inmate. There was nowhere for an inmate to go to get help. So there was lots of violence. There was staff pit other inmates against other inmates, and it was, you know, it was difficult. So a group of guys got together and decided that they had enough, that they wanted to fight for some more rights. Because, yes, people make mistakes, they go to prison, and they're paying, that's their punishment. But why should they not be treated at least like a human being while they're inside? And, you know, have your basic rights, your basic needs, because they deny you everything. They deny you sleep, they deny you food. But the system has changed, but it's a day for reflection on all the guys that have suffered, because many men lost their lives in prisons because of it, through riots, through fighting with the staff.
Through suicide. Suicide is like the number one leading killer for prison.
Yeah, it's
prisoners.
Actually, it's pretty predominant. It's there's no outlet for a guy to go to. I mean, the person's troubled already. He has enough problems already. And while he's inside, excuse me, there was staff, I'd say back, you know, in the 80s that were that would encourage you. Mm-hmm. You know, they knew that you were suicidal, that you've had the tendency, you tried to kill yourself before. And they would almost encourage you by antagonizing you and segregating you away from everybody else. If, let's say, your girlfriend left you or you lost your family member, you're stressed out, you know, you don't know what you're going to do, and then they just added it to it. If they didn't like you, they gave you a hard time.
Okay. So you say you've been commemorating Prisoner Justice Day for 28 years.
Yeah.
What do people do on this day?
It's different in different institutions, but basically nobody works that day. You know, it's observed by everywhere, and as far as I know in North America, nobody works and nobody eats. It's 24 hours just to reflect. I don't think it's too hard for someone to think about somebody that suffered to give you the things that you have. Mm-hmm. I mean, it might sound trivial to have a TV set or to be able to go to the canteen and buy yourself a can of Coke. It sounds small, but for someone that's inside for a long time, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. So it's just some time to reflect and, try to remember the things that they did for you.
Okay. And are there ever any consequences for prisoners who, because you're saying that you don't work on that day and or you don't eat, are there consequences or punishment for observing the day? Or
I would say up until the late 90s, the staff weren't too happy about the day. And I guess the government decided in all their wisdom that they would observe the day with us, and they would give us the day. So now they don't charge you or throw you in the hole if you refuse to work that day, because they all know that no one's going to work that day or nobody's going to eat unless you're diabetic and you have to eat.
Okay, I'm going to ask you one more question, then we'll take a little break. I really appreciate you sharing your personal story.
Oh, it's okay.
I appreciate that you came in today. First of all, how long have you been out of prison this time around?
I was just released in March, okay. And I did 10 years.
You did 10 years.
Yes.
So how does it feel to be out?
It's actually quite overwhelming, but I've learned to, through some programs that I've taken, I've learned to cope with stress and, to be able to try to function more in society, because prison in itself is a whole world by itself. To live inside someplace, especially for a long time, when you get out in society, like now they have these iPods and all these funky cell phones, and this stuff is all new to me. Mm-hmm. So it's a little overwhelming, but I'm taking it slowly, just one day at a time.
And you're at a recovery house in Côte des Neiges, which is for Jewish men.
Yes.
How did you end up going there?
To be honest with you, I had no idea that I was actually Jewish. It was a long time ago. I always wondered, because I see my mother, she had a Star of David around her neck, and I wasn't really sure what it was. And it was a few years back, I was in Ontario, I had seen a rabbi come into the prison. And for some reason, I was drawn to him, so I went and started to talk to him. And then he asked me about my family, and he asked me about my mother, and he said, well, my father was Catholic, my mother was Jewish. And he says, what? He says, your mom's Jewish. I said, yes. He says, well, then you're Jewish. And I didn't realize. I mean, I'd always been intrigued by Judaism. I thought it was interesting. And from that moment on, I tried to learn as much as I could.
Wow. So before that, you didn't realize what the Star of David was, and you knew that your mother was Jewish, but you didn't realize that that had any connection to who you were.
Actually, to be honest, I didn't know she was Jewish. My father was a very hardline Catholic. He was French-Canadian. I was raised Catholic. I was an altar boy. I was in the choir. And so I wasn't exposed to any of it until I was in my late 30s.
Okay. Is your mother still alive?
No, actually, she's not.
Okay. So where is she from?
She's from Poland.
She's from Poland. And do you know when she came here to Canada?
I guess it was just in some time during 42 or 43. It was her my grandfather that brought her and my mother and her brother here to... Actually, they brought him to the States. And then my grandfather went back to recover some of his money to bring it back, and he never made it back.
Okay.
So, and then my mother moved to Canada.
And so she wore a Star of David, but she never did anything connected to her Jewish identity.
No, she lost her entire family. She has nobody. She had nobody.
Mm-hmm.
She was by herself. I never had an opportunity to talk to her about it, so...
Mm-hmm. So we're going to come back and maybe we can talk a little bit more about what happened when this rabbi came to the prison.
Sure.
Okay. So we're just going to take a little break and we'll be back with John Barry.
Er hat sich die Städtel auf den Shortwave auf CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
All right, we're back on Shtetl on the Shortwave on CKUT 90.3 FM, and we're live in the studio with Adam Stotland and John Barry. John has just been telling us a little bit. Thank you so much for sharing your personal story, and we're going to come back to that. But I thought before we do, we would take a moment to hear a little bit more music from Adam. But Adam, did you have a question that you wanted to ask John?
I was just curious what the rabbi's name was, if you recall.
I believe it was Rabbi Weinstein.
Okay.
Do you know him?
I don't know him, but I asked because my third cousin is a prison chaplain rabbi.
What's his name?
Rosenberg is the last.
Actually, I've heard of Rabbi Rosenberg.
Yeah.
Here in Montreal?
I believe outside Ottawa.
Outside of Ottawa.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to talk more about that. And first, we're going to hear another song off of your album. What's the song called?
Great. This song is called Yaribon.
Okay. What does that mean?
It means master of the world.
Is that referring to Parker, the tech of Shtetl?
100%.
What is that referring to?
It's referring to God.
Okay.
And it's actually a poem that's about 400 years old, and traditionally it's sung at the Friday night Shabbos table.
Okay.
So I figured that Friday afternoon is a very good time to play it. And I sort of wrote the melody in a Middle Eastern kind of vein.
Okay.
And it goes like this. Yaribon olam ve'olamaya antu malka melech malchaya Ovar givurtech vetimaya Shvar kodamach leachavaya Yaribon olam veolemaya Antu malika melech malchaya Yaribon olam veolemaya Antu malika melech malchaya Rav Revin Ovdech V'Takifin Machir Emaya V'Zakif Kififin Lu Yichye Yivar Shinin Alfin Layeo Gvurtech V'Chush Benaya Ela Hadilei Yekar Urvuta V'Rok Yatanach Mipumar Yevata V'Apek Yatamech Migol Galuta Mechti vechart mikol umaya Yaribon olam veolemaya Antu malika melech malchaya Yaribon olam veolemaya Antu malika melech malchaya שכתוב ולקודש קודשים אתרדי ויחדו רוחין ונפשין וזמרו לך שירין ורחשים ורושלים קחתה דשופר היה יריבון עולם ועולמיה אנטו מלכה מלך מלכיה יריבון עולם ועולמיה Malchaya, Yaribon Olam, Veolemaya, Antu Malika, Melech Malchaya, Yaribon Olam, Veolemaya, Antu Malika, Melech Malchaya.
Very nice. nice. How long have you been playing music, Adam?
Music? I picked up the violin at about 6 years of age.
Wow.
Yeah.
What other instruments do you play?
Well, I actually don't play violin.
Okay.
That was sort of my, like, twinkle, twinkle, little star moment in the, you know, grade one. I play piano. I play some bass. Play some mandolin, some drums and percussion. I sort of like to fool around with a bunch of instruments.
Okay. And so on the album Ma'agal, it's like Jewgrass music and with like a Middle Eastern influence.
That's right.
And okay, so it's a little bit, it's eclectic. It's not just bluegrass music.
Right, I mean, just like going back to the circle, circle of friends, circle of actual musicians that are on the record, we have a fiddler that plays Celtic sort of style. We have a Turkish oud player that sort of lends to that like Middle Eastern vibe. And it's just, it's like a real hodgepodge circle of guys that that sort of helped me create this sound.
Okay, and are they going to all be performing with you at the Ghetto Show?
Not all. There's about 15 people that are on the album. Oh. And each of them are actual gigging musicians in town. So
okay.
Some are on tour, some have gigs, but there will certainly be a fierce representation of musicians
okay.
at the show.
Okay, I look forward to hearing
and
it.
And for more info about the show, you can check out nights@ghettoshoal.com.
Okay, nights@ghettoshoal.com.
That's right.
Got it. All right.
Thanks.
And the Ghetto Shoal is such a cool like venue. It's a synagogue, but at the same time, there are a lot of musical shows that happen there.
And that's right.
It's an interesting space in Montreal. I'm looking forward to going there more. And it's kind of, I actually did go there this year for the first time to see Why Love.
Yeah.
And it was a bit odd for me being in like an Orthodox synagogue. I don't even go to synagogue altogether, but being in an Orthodox synagogue and listening to music that I really don't associate at all with synagogue,
right.
It was sort of an interesting mix or vibe. And I'm sort of curious to see how it's all going to develop. And I know there's a whole bunch of shows that are happening this year there.
That's true. This is, my show is actually the first out of a 10-part series.
Okay.
That'll be happening straight through to probably May.
Okay,
May of 2011.
We'll be getting those musicians onto Shtetl.
Great.
All right.
Thanks, Doran.
So, John, we're back with you. And we had started before talking about this moment when the rabbi came into the synagogue. How does it work? Is it mostly just a Christian chaplain that comes? Are there chaplains for all the different faiths?
Actually, there's the Catholic priests that are there, and they're there all the time. You know, they're there during the day. The rabbi comes in only once a month because he has lots of prisons that he has to go to. And there's no synagogue inside the prison. It's just, I met him just outside the gymnasium. I was on my way to go work out and I saw him and I said, it caught my eye. And like I said, I was just drawn to him. So I went up and started talking to him because I thought it was interesting. So,
and so where did the conversation that you had with him lead?
It led to the first time that I ever prayed, and I did the film with him. And
wow.
It was some of my friends saw me put on the kippah, and I was afterwards. They were like, you know, hey, what's that? And I said, well, I just found out that I'm actually Jewish. So it was exciting and overwhelming at the same time.
Was it an odd reaction that you got from the other inmates? Had they ever met any other Jews before?
I guess it's probably a good thing, but you don't actually find too many Jewish people inside prison.
Really?
No, actually not. I think for the most part, I have to say I'd have to give them credit on how they're raised from the very beginning.
I'm no expert. I don't know the statistics, but I know that there are a lot of programs that help Jewish people that are in prison. So I assume that maybe, like, we don't always know who is and is not Jewish. We might not, for example, you didn't even know that you were Jewish.
Yes.
So it's hard. It's not an identity that's visible always. So maybe there are more people than we actually know about.
I'd say that in most places that I've been at, there's probably only been about maybe 4 to 5 guys in any institution.
Are people usually open about being Jewish? These people, how did you find out that they were Jewish?
Well, because in most institutions, you have to wear your name tag on your jacket or on your on some part of your clothing.
Okay.
So you see the last name, so it's easy to associate who they are.
So you put on tefillin for the first time. Like, what year was this in? How long ago was that?
It would be 2004.
how do you feel about this Jewish identity? How do you connect to it, not having been raised Jewish and finding out that it's really a part of who you are? Does it feel like it's a real part of who you are?
I guess the probably the more that I've thought about it and been exposed to more and more things, I find some of it pretty rigid. It's good. I've been eating kosher now since 2005.
Oh, wow.
And I found it hard, and now I don't have a problem with it. It's something that's come along all right.
You started eating kosher. Is that an option in prison?
Oh, actually, it is, yeah. Yes, they have Muslim diets, and they have kosher diets. You can't deny a person their spiritual food. So if a person's a non-pork eater or if they're kosher, they get those diets for them.
And so right now, you're in this recovery home for Jewish men.
Yes.
What's it like there? How many men are there?
Right now, there's currently five of us that are there.
Mm-hmm.
It's run by Rabbi Silverstein. He's a great guy. I was very happy for the opportunity to be able to come to the place because it's secure, it's comfortable, it makes you feel like at home. You know, they talk to you, they ask you how your things are going with you. So I'd say it's actually a pretty good place, and not a lot of people know about it because it's the only place in North America. They have no other place for Jewish men to go or women to go.
Really?
No, it's the only place.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's unbelievable.
It was the rabbi from out of Toronto that had mentioned it to me, and that's why I transferred out here to Quebec.
You transferred out here to Quebec so that when you were done your sentence, you could go to this home?
Exactly, yeah.
Wow. I'm kind of amazed to find out that there's no other places like this anywhere in North America.
No.
For I would think that maybe Chabad would have some places for people to come. Do you know?
I don't know offhand if they do, but, I mean, that would sure fall in line with their...
The way, yeah.
Think that they do have something.
I wonder if there's homes for Muslim inmates when they come out, or...
To be honest, I think in Toronto, there is a place that for Muslim men to go to when they're released.
Okay.
Yeah.
How difficult is it to get out of the prison system? Because you've been in there for over two decades, going in and out?
Actually, it's closer to three. It's actually just a vicious circle. Back when I was 16 years old, when I first went in, like I said, I went to Collins Bay, and at the time the place was referred to as Gladiator School because it was violent. There was stabbings regularly. There was beatings regularly. You had to learn to adapt or you weren't going to make it. So I say that it's, for most guys, it's just a revolving door. You're warehoused. You don't really get I wouldn't say the opportunities, because some of the opportunities are there, but guys are afraid to ask for the help because they're so against the system. I mean, they've been taught... They've learned their whole lives to fight against the system.
Okay, so they don't even trust if there's a program that's a program to help inmates. They wouldn't even trust participating in it.
No, now they've changed the system quite a bit. I'd say over the last 20 years, it's gotten better. Like I mentioned to you earlier, the more of the staff that are coming into the system now are young. And they have degrees in sociology. They're smart people. So they're being more and more apathetic, I guess, to your situations. But
okay, sympathetic, you mean like they're more there for positive reasons than to be there as guards? Or you feel
yeah,
like they...
I think they're looking more to trying to help people, you know, because
okay.
You do need the help because your thinking process on the way you live. Like, I mean, I was a pro-criminal for pretty much my whole life. And that's the only way that I could think. I was never exposed to nothing else. I was in the system for so long that nothing else. Even now, it's difficult. Just looking for a job. You think about I'm 43 years old now, and I look for like where's my life going to be in 10 years from now? And it's hard enough for people that are. Not been into the system to get along in life. So starting off at 43 years old with all this background stuff, it's going to be hard. But I think, like I said, I think I found the right help that I need right now. So,
what are the first steps to adjusting to your new life?
I guess it probably sounds a little trivial, but when I first got out, I've never taken a subway in my life. And the first time that I went down and got on the metro here, I found myself to be almost claustrophobic, people bumping into you, banging into me. And when you're inside prison, that doesn't happen. I mean, people know what kind of person you are inside, so they avoid you. I'm not saying that I was over-violent, but I protected myself. I survived, went through a lot of turmoil and a lot of crazy stuff. But it's hard to adjust.
So, like, one of the first steps is taking the metro more and getting used to crowds?
Just getting used to people.
Getting used to people.
Yeah, it's just, like I said, like through the rabbi at the house, I've been exposed to some different things that I've never been exposed to. Like I said, some of the stuff I find is quite rigid, but for the most part, I think it's exciting. I'm looking forward to learning more.
Okay, about Judaism.
Yeah.
You feel it's a helpful tool for sort of like integrating and thinking, changing how you're thinking and how you're living and your philosophy on life?
Actually, to be honest, yeah, 100%.
Okay. Are you at all involved outside of the recovery home where you're at with Rabbi Silverstein?
Yes.
Are you involved in the Jewish community in Montreal in any way?
Actually, I just joined the Jewish Y a couple of weeks ago, but that's just probably about as far as it goes for right now.
Okay. Do you feel like you would be comfortable in the Jewish community here? Do you feel...
That's a tough question. I'm trying to get used to it. Like I said, it's been 30 years of being around violence and people that don't care, you have to watch yourself all the time. So now for me, being exposed to people that are loving and caring, it's you're a little bit taken back from it, but I think I'm stepping forward because I'm tired. You know, it's been long enough. And I've never really found anything that's piqued my interest until now.
Do you think you're going to become a rabbi?
I don't think it would go that far, but...
No, like, I mean, I was just kind of joking, but I guess I'm just wondering what you think you might consider trying to do now that you're out. Like, do you think you might try to get re-educated or try a different line of work? How do you think you're going to proceed? I'm asking a lot of tough questions. You don't have to answer.
That's okay. I don't mind. It's going to be hard. Like I say, in my own mind, it's hard for me because I think all of the things that I've done. So I try to look to get a job, you know, to wind up when I leave this home to get my own place. It's going to be hard. It's going to be a struggle. But I think with some good direction from Rabbi Silverstein and a few other people that I've met, I think things will work out for me, finally. I hope.
It sounds like they will. I just want to ask you one more question before we go to break.
Okay.
Why do you think it's still important to observe or commemorate Prisoner Justice Day?
For myself, I've lost a few of my friends to suicide and to murder inside prison. I know the pains. I see the grief and the hardship that men go through. Like I said, you've done something wrong, but you need to be able to go forward, and there's just not enough out there to help a person.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for sharing your story, and you're
going to
stay
welcome.
With us. We're going to take a little break, and we're going to come back. We're going to hear more music from Adam, and we're also going to hear from a woman named Dee Lecomte. She is an incredible lady. She does a show here on CKUT called Prison Radio, and she's going to tell us a little bit about what's going on next week for Prisoner Justice Day. So we'll be back on Shtetl in a couple of minutes.
When Moses ascended Mount Sinai, he went to hear God's word. When the prophet descended, he came carrying tablets inscribed with God's will.
Thou shalt not kill.
Thou shalt not kill.
Thou shalt not kill.
Thou shalt be fruitful and
thou
multiply.
Shalt be fruitful and multiply.
Thou shall listen to Shtetl on the shortwave on CKUT 90.3 FM.
All right, we're back on Shtetl on the shortwave, and this has been a really interesting show. I really appreciate that all these guests came into the studio, John Barry coming in, talking to us very candidly about his experience, Adam Stotland also playing music with full heart and soul. Amazing. It's so nice to have live music on the show. And you can hear more Jewish music. There's going to be tons of Jewish music this year in Montreal. There's something happening. There's something in the air. And if you want to find out what's happening at the end of August, you can go to montrealjewishmusicfest.com and see all the musicians that are going to be playing there. And for right now, I wanted to bring in Dee into the studio. Hi, Dee.
Thank you for inviting me to the show.
If I wasn't doing Shtetl on the shortwave, I would 100% be, I would want to do prison radio with you. And I love the show, and I think it's amazing work that you do. And I wanted to know if you would be willing to explain to people a little bit about your experience with prison activism and what's going to be happening next week for Prisoner Justice Day.
Okay, well, first of all, I'd like to say thank you, John, for sharing, you know, your story. I think this is very, very important to have stories like this heard over the airwaves. It's extremely important. And I try myself as often as I can to get the voices out from prisoners. So, yes, Prisoners Justice Day is August 10th, but we already started today, Friday morning after, now on Shtetl on the Shortwave. And also on Off the Hour, we're going to be broadcasting mostly voices from folks that are inside prison.
Okay.
Whether they're pre-recorded, we're hoping that we have listeners even in New York State. Can you believe it? In Malone, New York. So we're hoping that they're going to be phoning in. And then on Tuesday, August 10th, which is Prisoners Justice Day, we have quite a lineup. It'll be all the Tuesday morning after. Is loaded with lots of stuff that we're going to have. Peter Collins is a guy in Bath, and he's also spent time in Collins Bay before, too. He's doing a life sentence. So
people can tune in all week and hear different programming around prisoner justice.
Oh, day. Yeah, definitely. Okay. Definitely.
Just one last thing before we hear a little bit more from Adam. I just wanted to know, why did you personally get involved in prison activism in the first place?
Well, you know, I guess I never had a really negative look on prisoners, and it's because when I was growing up, even at the age of 4, my dad had an auto body shop, and he, when some guy came out of the can, you know, like out of the joint, whatever, looking for a job, and oh, yeah, you can work, okay, you know what I mean? And I was never brought up to think that these people were the other. So my dad, throughout his years, and he had another business after, and he did hire guys, and it would be like, you know, I just had this kind of idea that you never know what a man's been through when he's been in the joint, you know what I mean? And my dad never spent any time in prison, but I guess he had a compassionate heart that way and believed in giving people second chances. And those second chances, and there were a lot of them, and they turned out to be really great, upstanding men and everything, so people can make mistakes. And I just want to put a little call out there to maybe the Jewish community, you know, too, you know, like if you're willing to hire somebody, you know, give somebody a chance, because that can make everything, and it makes yourself feel good too, to be able to be, you know. So that's how it started. And then how I got into activism, that's a whole other thing. But anyways, that's for another day.
Okay, wow. Your father sounds like an amazing man. So we're going to hear another song from Adam Stotland. What's this song going to be about?
This song is about doing things that are righteous, actually. I feel like it sort of fits in line with the theme of the show. And it's actually not on the album. This is hot off the presses, and it'll be on the next album.
Okay.
And this is the world premiere of this song.
Wow.
Hashem, ki lo ta'amnu, ki lo ta'amnu. לא חלו על רחמה.
Okay, do righteous things.
Yes, always.
That's a good message, Adam. Yeah. Okay, so we're coming close to the end of the show. We still got 10 minutes, and I wanted to let people know that we just heard from Adam Stotland off of his, well, this isn't off of his album, Ma'agal, but that's what he's going to be playing at the Ghetto Shul on September 1st. So to check that out, you can go to The Ghetto Shul.
Nights@ghettoshul.com.
Nights@ghettoshul.com.
Yeah.
And to find out about the greater festival that you're part of, you can go to the MontrealJewishMusicFest.com.
That's it.
Okay. And so we've been in studio with John Barry, who shared his story, with Dee LeComte, who has a radio show. And you can listen to Prison Radio at the same time as you tune into Shtetl. It's on the fourth Friday of the month. And Dee is always doing amazing programming where you can hear from prisoners themselves sometimes. Dee, sometimes you read out from letters from prisoners.
Yes, we get a lot of articles and letters and stuff like that. Yeah, I read those out as well. And sometimes also interviewing people who work on behalf of prisoner justice.
Yeah. Okay. Is it a hard thing to go into the prisons and to volunteer there?
Yeah, it's made a lot harder in the last few years, actually, than it was prior to. CSC has really kind of put on a lot more restrictions in regards to volunteers and stuff like that. So it's getting more difficult. But it depends also. I think it's harder to start up a group. If you're with a group that's already there, then it's not so difficult. But to start up a new group, it's extremely difficult. And it's difficult to have one that isn't, that is like maybe separated from, like if one is not going there under the religious community or under like AA or CA, you know, things like that, then it's more difficult to get involved.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you, John, you had mentioned something to me before about, I wanted to kind of give people an idea of what are some of the challenges that people might face in prison. And something that you said that really stood out was visitation. And you told a story about that. Would you want to share that?
I guess it's probably been around now for about 15 years, maybe a little bit longer, but they come up with a new system for screening visitors when they come through. It's an ion scanner. It's a drug testing machine.
Okay.
And they test, like, your ID. It's a little box you put your stuff into, your change, your money, little small things you put into it. And if it tests positive for no matter how small the amount, they'll refuse your visits to come in.
Like positive
For THC, for heroin, cocaine, any one of the mainstream drugs that'll come up. And I've seen so many guys that have gone through it. I went through it myself. I had I had friends that came down from the West Coast, and while they were in Ontario, they wanted to come and see me. And I had them on my visitors list, and they came down. One of the ladies was my aunt, 72 years old, and her money tested positive for THC, and they refused the visit. So from that, it led to me going into segregation for 3 months because I know she doesn't do drugs. So, but it's like Dee was saying, CSC is clamping down more and more on people trying to help. Because a lot of the guys that are in prison aren't very educated, and they don't offer a very good educational system as far as I'm concerned. And for people that are on the outside that are smart, that can help these people, I think CSC is putting up blocks to keep them from helping them, because they're opening the eyes to the inmates as exactly what they're allowed and what they're not allowed to do.
Okay, they're educating them on their rights.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And just to give an idea about how these ion scanners work, remember when they have drug dogs, they have like one part per 500,000 or something, or and then for an ion scanner, it's one part per million. So, and these drug dogs are very, very high. You know, they're actually a lot more reliable than these ion scanners. And there's also a lot of false positives. There's different perfumes and lotions that can spring off that, you know, say there's something else. And the penitentiaries in the States, they stopped using them because there were so many class action suits against them. And what do? They bring them up here, and we're using them here. And it is doing exactly what John has talked about. I've heard story after story of these older people coming in, and they just don't understand, you know, how they've been, you know, like
tested positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really sad, and it can be difficult for somebody could been from a, like if you've been to the hospital or something, you better let them know that you're under certain kind of medication, because that medication can seep through maybe your skin or something like that, and just this. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Right. So mm-hmm. like a person unbeknownst to themselves mm-hmm. will make the effort to go and visit a family member, a friend in prison, and will be rejected because there's this mm-hmm. inaccurate test that's mm-hmm. done mm-hmm. on them.
Mm-hmm. And it really does not impede or anything about drugs being put, because any real large amount of drugs are coming through, not by visitors, you know, like.
How are they coming through?
Do you really want me to say? I don't know. I'm going to get CSC after me. there's a lot of contract workers that probably that's what I've been told anyways.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like neither the system nor the prisoner. It's kind of going through in the middle. And I've set it out there. And if people get upset with me, well, that's anyways. Well,
I'd have to say that CSC has created a whole new franchise within the prison systems right now with the non-smoking.
Mm. What do you mean?
Well, they took smoking out of the institutions right across Canada, all federal institutions. And actually, I think Quebec is probably the only institution provincially that still has smoking in it. So by taking cigarettes out, it's quite profitable for people to bring tobacco in. So like Dee was saying, with contractors, it's not just contractors, and I'm not afraid to say it, that I know that staff also do it.
They bring in cigarettes and they sell it to the inmates.
Oh yeah, okay. You can make an awful lot of money. You buy a bale of tobacco in a store for $20. Inside the institution, you can make $500 or more off of it.
Wow!
So it's quite appealing. It's not illegal. Mm-hmm. If a staff gets caught, he's only reprimanded. Odds are he's probably not going to lose his job. But. Mm-hmm.
And so then, henceforth, they can bring in other things as well.
Yeah, they've changed it all now, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And some of those cigarettes, just a cigarette, tobacco cigarette, will go for $5 per cigarette.
Oh, and that's like that's not even a cigarette. Like, I've actually seen guys that have taken, like, if you look at a normal cigarette, you can break that into three.
Oh my God.
Cigarettes, okay. And you can sell each of them for $10. Like, Quebec, it's cheaper. Ontario, it's more expensive.
Okay, this is going to be my last question, ignorant question, and might be obvious to some people, but like, how do people in prison actually have money to buy cigarettes or to buy things? Where do they get the money from?
I would say a lot of pressure is probably put on family members and friends to help people with their substance abuse, or which is unfortunate, but it's a hard cycle to get out of, especially when you're inside the jail. You can work while you're in prison. in Ontario. I'm not sure about the. I think it's right across Canada now that they're making it mandatory for guys to have a grade 10 education. So before you can usually go to work somewhere else, they want you to at least get your grade 10, mm-hmm. And then after that, you can get a job.
Okay.
But there's employment in institutions. It's not a lot. It's predominantly kitchen work and cleaning. It's like you're forever cleaning and cooking food.
Okay. But also the pay scale hasn't went up since, I think, 1986.
No, it hasn't gone up at all.
So I think a maximum is at, what, $690 a day or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, $690 a day, yeah.
And, yeah, so there's gaffing. You know, people will sell something to the, like, there's all little ways.
Well, there's guys that do artwork inside. There's guys that do tattoos inside.
Okay.
There's guys that sell drugs. There's guys that sell contraband. Like she said, the guys that when smoking was in the institution, you could borrow a pack of cigarettes, and when you pay it back, you have to pay back two.
With interest or?
Yeah, it's interest. You pay two for one, you pay three for five. It's it's quite expensive. It's more so than the bank almost, I guess.
Wow. Okay. So much information. I got to listen to Prison Radio more and learn more. I feel like I need to educate myself. Thank you so much for sharing all that. And that really brings us to the end of Shtetl on the Shortwave today. It's a very different show than we usually do, and that's wonderful. I appreciate you both, Dee and John, coming in and sharing all this knowledge with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
And we actually have like 1 or 2 minutes left. I don't know, Adam, if you want to like bring us out with like a little
bit
of guitar.
Sure,
please do.
Go.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for tuning in to Shtetl on the Shortwave.
Sama veim habuvi, sameya tesama.